Today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 85. What we're going to talk about today is the role of the father as a king into his home. Some of you have probably heard before the saying that the Lord is a prophet, priest, and king in his three functions here on earth and actually in heaven as well. And that the father in his home is to in some way resemble the same offices that the Lord has. And so what we're going to talk about today is how the father is to exercise his role as king in his home. Now, obviously, this is obviously under the authority of the Lord himself. And so we need to make sure that we understand that. But nonetheless, that's what we're going to talk about today. Should be a good show for you. Before we do that, I want to take care of a couple of items of business. First of all, make sure that you're registered as a user of the website. This enables you to get updates as to when new podcasts come out or any changes that are made on the website. You will receive an email, automatic notification of that, so that you don't have to keep checking the website page to see when new things come up. You'll be notified of that automatically. It also gives you an opportunity to make comments to the website and to any of the podcasts that are made. So I appreciate you doing that. And you can do that by registering on the right column of the website. Also, we'll make sure that you're following us on all the various social media, YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. And I'm looking for more friends on my Facebook page. So if you use Facebook, go over to the Legacy Podcast. And you can go through my link, or you can go on the right-hand column. You'll see a link on the website, and that will take you over to that page. And you can like that, and that will help us get a little bit of higher rankings over there. I'm still looking for people to write in their questions about legacy and building a legacy and leaving a legacy and what all that entails, questions you might have about anything that we talk about here on the Legacy Podcast. I hope to be able to get some of those collected together into an area on the website to help others. And so if you have a question, email that in to steve@thelegacypodcast.com. Again, steve@thelegacypodcast.com. And then third up is make sure that you are using the affiliates that are listed on the second or the center right column of the website. Today's affiliate focus, first of all, is U.S. Legal Forms. The reason why I endorse U.S. Legal Forms is because it is the best place that I know of being able to get together all of your heritage or legacy documents together. So, for example, you need a will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive for both the husband and a wife. And the best place I know of to get that is through U.S. Legal Forms. I think it's about $50 for joint documents like that. And you can do that by clicking on the U.S. Legal Forms banner on the website. Also, is Liberty Classroom is our second affiliate focus. Liberty Classroom is just a phenomenal resource, particularly if you have high school kids and you want to be able to teach them history. I know there's a lot of different history curriculums out there in the homeschooling world, but this, I think, is by far one of the best that I've ever seen. And it's audio, visio. You can also take quizzes online. Everything's online. And it's got Western Civilization, two core. So Liberty Classroom is a great resource for you to be able to learn all the various history, Western civilization, and American history, and Austrian economics for only, it's less than $100, $99, $95, something like that, I think it is. And so that's a great resource for you. You can listen to your car, you can teach it to the kids online, whatever it might be. So check that out, Liberty Classroom. And finally, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way to do that is become a Legacy Partner. And our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. With that, you have access to an exclusive members-only site that gives you some downloadable material, some discounts to some vendors, that kind of thing. Plus, you're able to support the show $30 a year, or it comes out to be about 25 cents an episode. So consider becoming a Legacy Partner. And with that, that takes care of the introductory material. So let me now focus on the main subject, which is fathers serving as kings in their home. And the first thing that need to be said is there's been a lot of criticism about this concept of fathers being kings in their own home. And the idea is that the authority is such for fathers that it is subjecting all those in the house to unreasonable rule and all this kind of stuff. It's usually put out by feminists or liberals. Part of it is because there is abuse in the home on occasion. And part of it is because there is a lack of understanding of what it really means to be a king and to be a servant. We look at the kings in our civil societies today and we see all the abuses that have taken place in history over the years of kings usurping their authority over their subjects and taking from them. In fact, in the Bible, we see that Samuel warned the nation of what was going to happen if they wanted a king, and how the king was going to take their children and put them in the army and take all their horses and their livestock and take their gold. And of course, all those things happened even in Israel. And so there has been an abuse and authority of kings. And so let us make sure that when we talk about this, that we are looking at the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the perfect one, who is the example for us of this. Now, I'll refer, of course, to some certain situations that may be, of a practical nature or historical nature as we look at some examples. But bottom line is that if we are going to claim to be kings in our own home, then we have to understand that we are under the authority of the great King, the King of Kings. And so that's the first thing I want to make mention of. But secondly, I want to just look at some of the ways in which this functions in the home and some of the various roles of a king and as a father would then take on those roles in the home. So the first one is leading the family. You know, it's always been the standard for kings to lead their armies out to battle. It's always been the standard that kings are going to be the ones who, you know, you look at any show on television or you read any book, they're the ones riding the white horses and they're the ones leading the troops and they're out the one out front. It's all about leadership. And, you know, a king is one who leads his family and a father is one who leads his family. So what does it mean to lead your family? Well, a couple of things. First of all, points the way. I think of this. I think of a picture of maybe a group of explorers or a group of pioneers or something like that who are traveling west or traveling somewhere, and they get to the top of the mountain, and the leader of the group takes his hand and he points out to the valley and to the other mountains, and you can see him kind of pointing out the direction that they're going to go down the hill and to the valley and up the other side, and that's what a leader does. A leader points the way, shows them where they're going to go and the best way to get there. Second thing that a leader does in terms of leading his family or father leading his family is develops goals. It's impossible to show someone where you're going if you don't know yourself, if you don't know a direction, you don't know a goal that you're trying to achieve. I've heard it numerous times. I'm not sure exactly who came up with it originally, but I've heard it said numerous times that if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And so fathers need to know where they're going. They need to have a vision for their family. They need to be able to know and point out the direction that they are heading. And so this requires developing goals. Now, there's some things to consider when developing goals. First of all, the goal needs to be attainable. Now, we need to have goals that are in some ways unattainable, like perfection. We can't have that as a goal, or we can't achieve that in this life because we're still in the fallen nature and we're still in a fallen world, but that should still be one of our goals to, you know, work towards perfection. But when it comes to family leadership, we need to have goals that can be attainable. We need to have progress. We need to be able to see some victories in our family and in our relationships. And so attainable goals. The second thing, they need to be measurable. Some nebulous goal about, you know, getting better, that's not concrete enough. It needs to be concrete enough that you can measure at the end of the year and say, okay, we achieved that, or we didn't achieve that, or we achieved it to 20% or 30% or whatever it is. It needs to be measurable. And it needs to be difficult enough that it will move you, that it will, I think of in exercise, you know, we used to make goals all the time in running when I was a competitive runner. And, if we could run a mile at 4 minutes and 30 seconds, it wasn't a big deal to make a goal of 4 minutes and 28 seconds. What would have been a big deal is under 4 minutes and 20 seconds. That would have been a big deal. And so, you know, you got to have a goal big enough that it really moves you, that it makes you work and makes you, you know, focus. And so, you know, as fathers, we need to have goals for our family, goals for our household that are meaningful and measurable and ones that we can really get behind. Another aspect of leading that a father might have is to take initiative. You know, it's so amazing how much we have lost this concept of men taking initiative in things these days, especially, you know, now that there's supposed to be this egalitarianism in our society and you know, that women are supposed to be able to step up and take on many of the responsibilities of men and all these kinds of things. This has really been blurred. And so a lot of men do not know how to take initiative. You know, the idea of being able to take initiative is that if you have a decision to make, that you'll make something, that you'll make a decision, you won't just do it. I remember reading about Colonel Chamberlain, who led the troops on Little Round Top in Pennsylvania and Gettysburg. And he, of course, was from the North. I think he led the main reserves. And when they were out of ammunition, they were supposed to hold Little Round Top and weren't allowed, they would not allow any of them to flank on their side. And so they were supposed to hold that, and they were out of ammunition, and they didn't really know how they were going to continue to go. They were losing their troops, and the I think it was the South Carolinian army was fighting against them, and they would come up the hill to the main regiment in which he was a commander, and they would try to hold them off time and time again until there was almost nothing left. And finally, Chamberlain's inferior officers came to him and said, you know, we're out of ammunition. We don't know what we're going to do next. And sure enough, at about that time, the South Carolinian troops came charging after him, and he had to make a decision. And his decision was to charge. And so, against all odds, the men under his authority charged on those who were coming up the hill from the South Carolinian army, and they were able to beat them back. And that is really what most people say held Gettysburg for the North. Now, we could go into all kinds of dialogue whether that was actually a good thing if the North held it, and I'm not going to talk about the war between the states, or the Civil War, whatever it's called, and the merits of that, good or bad. But the bottom line is he took leadership in being able to make a decision when a decision had to be made. And that's what fathers need to do. When there's a decision that needs to be made, we cannot sit back and have someone else make the decision for us. We need to make the decision, step up, and take the initiative. But this also means, you know, that we need to take initiative when it comes to seeing the needs of our family and making sure that things are taken care of properly. We can't wait till something happens. There's so many families that work from crisis to crisis because the fathers aren't taking initiative prior to the crisis to avert the crisis before it gets there. And then also another aspect of leading is making decisions and taking responsibility for those decisions. I talked about that a little bit earlier when it talked about taking initiative. But knowing that God will judge us in the end for our decisions makes it important for us to be able to make good decisions, but we still have to make a decision and live by those decisions. Sometimes it comes down to a household, you know, really torn on two decisions on whether to, you know, take this route or route A or route B. And it's important that a father is able to say, we're going to take route B, and then not blame somebody else if it doesn't work out, but take responsibility for it if it doesn't. And that enables them to take responsibility and to rise up. It's there's very little good that can come from a father who's wishy-washy and doesn't really take a stand and really know where to go. I think it's a tendency for all of us to be this way to some extent. I remember when I was in college, and to some extent I still have this problem, but not like I used to. But when I was in college, you know, I so much wanted to please my wife that you know, anytime we went out to dinner, I was like, so where do you want to go? What movie do you want to watch? What do you want to do? And I was making her make all the decisions because I didn't want to make a decision and it, you know, not turn out right. And then, you know, she not like that. And so I wanted her to take all the responsibility, make all the decisions so that, you know, if it didn't turn out right, she couldn't blame me. And that's not good manhood. That's not taking responsibility and rising up. Now, we need to take, obviously, into consideration our wife's needs. But at the same time, we need to make decisions and take responsibility for the decisions that we make. And then the last aspect of leading when it comes to being a father in the home and a king in his home is to be able to enlist others to help with achieving those goals. You know, a king has a court that has gathered around him to give him advice, to give him counsel, to help implement some of the policies and some of the leadership principles that he's put into place or whatever it is. You know, we think of King Arthur, and King Arthur was probably, you know, somewhat legendary and somewhat truthful, but, you know, he had the round table. And, you know, we look at all the, I mean, presidents today have advisors and cabinets and, you know, all these different kinds of things to help them implement some of the policies and strategic decisions that they're making. And the same thing should be true with fathers. We need to be able to have policies that we implement. We'll talk about that in just a second, but we need to be able to enlist other people to help us in implementing some of those policies and some of those plans and some of those goals and some of the desire that we have to achieve those things. And so this, of course, is where we enlist our children, we enlist our wife, we enlist, you know, others, friends, grandparents, you know, other wise men. We enlist their counsel, we enlist their help, we enlist their energy, their resources, all these kinds of things. You know, it's a foolish man who does not take the counsel of his wife to consideration when he makes a decision. And so this is where this comes into play, where we enlist others to help us in these decision-making processes and in leading the family. So that's what it is to lead a family, some aspects of that. Let's turn now to provision, which is another area of a king's responsibility to those under his rule. And the same thing is true for fathers in the home. It's important that they provide. You know, we have examples of all different kinds of kings throughout history who have provided in various ways for their subjects. And there are two main ways in which a father, as king of his home, is to provide for his house. And the first is physical provisions, and the second is spiritual provisions. When it comes to physical provisions, you know, this relates to the needs of the home physically, food and shelter and clothing, all the various necessities that the family may have. Now, in our culture, it is very common for women to be able to providing almost as much, if not more, of the income to the household than the father is. And many of you who are listening to this are probably homeschooling families, and so you subscribe obviously to a different pattern because the wife is usually at home homeschooling or whatever, and the father is, you know, building a business or employed or whatever it might be to bring in the income. But I want to just make a couple of comments about this because this is very common, and maybe you have not considered it in this respect before, but of course the scriptures say that the fall of man made it more difficult for man to be able to provide for his household. It says by the sweat of his brow he will now work and you know, bring in the food necessary and these kinds of things, and the curse upon the woman was that she was going to have pain and difficulty in childbearing. And that she was going to have to bear more children, and it was going to be more painful for it because of, you know, birth and death rates and all these kinds of things. And so I find it interesting that we do not require men, because we cannot, to help alleviate the curse upon women. They still have to give birth to children. They still have to take upon themselves that struggle and that labor. That's why it's called labor. They have to take on that labor, and yet husbands recruit their wives to take on some of the labor of the curse that was imposed upon them. And this should not be. We should be able to provide sufficiently for our household. Now, that does not mean that we need to have all the latest, nicest, best things that are out there. I'm talking about providing the basic necessities of life. And that's all the scriptures ever ask us to do, is to provide the basic necessities of life. And if we can provide more, what a blessing that is. But that's what's required. So providing physically is an aspect of being a father and being a king to the home as well. But providing spiritually is also important. Of course, providing spiritually is being able to provide the Word of God in the home, being able to provide avenues and channels by which the family can grow spiritually. They can eat deeply of the Word of God. And just as important it is for there to be healthy food physically to nourish the children and nourish the family, so too it is important for there to be spiritual food to nourish the family, to provide sustenance and growth to that family. And so, you know, you can have, you know, little tiny snacks for spiritual devotions, which, you know, that's okay once in a while. But unless there's meat of the Word, unless there's depth, unless there's real training in theology and real training in Bible and things of that nature, the children will grow up unhealthy spiritually. And the wife will be lacking in substance spiritually. And so it is important for fathers to be able to provide spiritually and physically for their families. And then another area of another aspect of leadership, another aspect of rule that the father is to have over his children, over his family, is protection. And again, this can be broken down into physical protection and spiritual protection. When it comes to physical protection, I like to tell the story. I don't remember who I heard it from now. I've heard so many different stories from different people about different things. But I remember hearing the story about one father who was giving his daughter to be married to a young man. And the young man had no rifle, no firearms in which to protect his home. And so the father was concerned about this situation. So he asked his son-in-law-to-be, how he anticipates protecting his daughter in the advent of a need that might arise. And the son said, well, I am skilled in the sword. And so he was going to use the sword to protect. But the bottom line I say that is that at least he understood his responsibility to do that. He understood that it was his role to protect his family physically. And we can do that in a lot of different ways. Of course, most of us men think of protecting our families. We think about, you know, the shotgun that's up in the closet that we would use in case someone were to come in and try to take our children or rob us or rape our wife or, you know, whatever it might be. We'd be able to use the shotgun to protect them. And that is an aspect of it, but there's more. There's the home defense aspect of it, but I want to just give one example to kind of show what I mean specifically that might be able to then spur some other thoughts about it. And that is the safety of the cars. Now, this is an area that I have been somewhat negligent on. Not that I have ever allowed my wife to drive an unsafe car, but I've allowed her to drive cars she has felt were unsafe. And so in some regards, she has not considered me to be a provider and a protector in this way. And so it's important for us as fathers, as kings of our household, to be able to protect our families when it comes to travel, the vehicles that they drive, the places that they go, protect them also physically in terms of poisons and foods and nutritions and all these kinds of things. There's so many aspects of protection that we can consider when it comes to this, and that's a role. And then there's also the spiritual protection. This is even more important than physical protection. If we think physical protection is important, what good is it if we save their life from the rapist, but they end up burning in hell because they do not have a relationship with Jesus? And so this is far more important, and yet it's still the physical protection is still important. And so the ways that we can protect our children, our family is, you know, making sure that we protect what comes into the home spiritually. you know, we wouldn't allow a drug dealer or a rapist or a murderer or something like that to come in our home physically. And yet I wonder how much we allow in through video games and television and movies and all these different kinds of forms of media that we allow into our homes through internet and television and communication devices and all this kind of stuff. And we need to be careful that we are ensuring the safety spiritually of our family. And then we also want to make sure that they have proper education spiritually, that they are receiving the right kind of information. And, you know, it reminds me of someone that I knew one time who said that they were raising their children and they did not want them to kind of dictate to their children what to believe. And so they were exposing them to, you know, every possible choice out there. And at the time, I knew that that couldn't have been the wisest choice. And sure enough, this family ended up having trouble with their children not following in their beliefs because they were exposed to so many different things that they got confused and they did not follow in the same spiritual steps. And so there comes a point at which we do need to expose our children to various philosophies and religions and things like that out there, but we need to most importantly protect their safety and ensure that that is that there are hedges around and that there are borders and boundaries that will keep them safe. You know, a king, he has a castle, and that castle has high walls and is designed to be kept for the security of the people. And in feudal times, obviously I'm not recommending we go to feudal times, but I am using it as an illustration. In feudal times, the castle was designed as a keep to ensure those around to have a place to flee to if there was a need for some safety. And they would flee inside the walls, and the king and his knights would protect them inside there. And that's the idea that a father is to have. A home should be a place of protection. It should be a place where he is making sure that there's nothing that enters into that home that would cause a problem for the family. And then the fourth area of leadership, the fourth area of rule, of authority, however you want to look at, that a father is to have in his home as he exercises the rule of a king in his kingdom, which is the home, is to be a policy maker and enforcer of those policies. Now, obviously, the groundwork, the guiding, the bedrock for his policies should be the scriptures. If he's going to be a godly ruler, a godly king, then the scriptures should be the outline by which he creates his policies for his home. But there are certain things that are not directly clarified or explained in the scriptures. And so there needs to be a policy for these in your home, obviously guided by the scriptures, but no doubt come up with that. So what does that mean? Well, there needs to be a policy about what kind of activities the children are involved in and how much activity. I've podcasted about this before, how it's so easy to be caught up in having your kids do everything and going in every different direction, all different kinds of activities and sporting events and even church functions in many ways, and for there to be little time actually in home together as a family because the family's all scattered around with various kinds of activities. And the challenge of that is that we can't really have much control over it when it's like that. And so we need to have a policy designed to explain how much we are going to be involved in those activities themselves and to make sure that we are, we're not violating that policy. And so coming up with an idea for that is helpful. And then in addition to having a policy about the various activities, we should have a policy about relationships as well. Some of you who are listening to this have probably already decided you're going to have your children not date, but actually court. And that would be a policy that you have in your home based upon what you see in the scriptures. That's what we're going to do here in our home. In fact, one of my sons, it was a few years back, had one of his friends, and they were at a church function, not the church we were going to, but a neighboring church. They had, you know, some friends of ours, and we were going to that, and they were going to that pretty regularly. And all of a sudden I found out that one of the little girls in the class liked one of my sons, and my son, you know, liked her, and they were talking about boyfriend, girlfriend. I had to explain to him that, you know, first of all, he's way too young to be talking boyfriend, girlfriend. Second of all, we don't do that in our home. That's not the policy that we follow. That's not the direction we take. We're going to do courtship and, you know, you're not going to be entangled, all these kinds of things. So I had to explain all that to him growing up, and that was a policy that we had. If I had not had that direction, if I had not had that policy in place about what we're going to do about relationships, that could have derailed. but not only is it in those kind of relationships, but also just relationships with the family. What kinds of friends are they going to have to play with? What kind of influences will there be? How much time will they have in spending with their friends? All those are policies that should be implemented in the home and have some kind of standard for that. And then, of course, policies about education. What kind of education are you going to have? Probably some of you listening to this are going to be homeschooling. And, of course, I would encourage that. Others of you may, you know, do some kind of co-op homeschooling, or, you know, you may do some homeschooling and some sending off to tutor. There's a lot of different choices, Christian schools, whatever it might be. And that should be a policy in the home that you're going to follow and set those standards. And then also there's a policy for the use of your time. Some of you know that I have created, because I did a podcast on it, some rules for our home, or some principles for order in our home. If you want to listen to that podcast, you didn't just, you know, search under the tags on the website for policies for the home or rules for the home. I think it's actually entitled Principles for Order in the Home. I'll see if I can put a link in the show notes for that if you haven't listened to that. But that's the kind of policies that we have in our home that I've developed. Of course, I hope that they are from scriptures, and they're designed to create some kind of standard in our home for how we are to act. I know Greg Harris, who was one of my mentors, he created the 21 rules of the house, and he created a whole curriculum kind of around that where you can teach the kids that, and they had coloring books to do, and taught different principles about those and that kind of thing. And that those are policies that you can have in your home, and that they're important to have. Of course, that would cover use of your time. One of the aspects of our policies in our home, one of the things that we do, of course, is we teach the kids that work comes before play. And so the use of their time has to be limited by that principle. And so if they first thing they do when they get up is they go out to play, no, that's not the case. They need to do their work first before they play. And then also a policy about money. If your kids are anything like mine, any money that they have, they'll immediately want to spend. Now, as they get older, my goal is that they get more mature, and hopefully they get to the point where they are making decisions about saving and investing and giving their money and things like that, as well as spending. But at first, you know, it's really hard for them to understand to save their money. You know, when they get $5, they want to go ahead and spend it right away, rather than teaching them if they could save up to $10, they could get a better gift or, you know, something like that. And so having a policy in the home about what you're going to do with money and how long you're going to, or you know, what you're going to encourage them to spend it on, or whether you're going to let them spend and make the decision on themselves, or whether you're going to be able to have some kind of input on it. Those things need to be decided upon. You have to have some kind of policy in the home about that. And then just a couple of tips about this is make sure you go over these with the kids. Make sure that everyone is on board. They know what the policy is, and that it's not just, you know, your policy as a father, but you have to communicate your goals. You have to communicate your policy to the rest in the family so that they're with it also. And then make sure that you enforce the policies. If you have a policy in the home but you don't enforce it, it's no good. I mean, you think about the speed limits in our civil society. If the speed limit is set at 55, but everybody can go 60 to 65 without getting a ticket, what's really the speed limit? Well, I know that if you got a ticket at 60, the judge would say the speed limit is 55. But in reality, because it's not enforced, the speed limit is 65 or whatever it is in this case. Well, the same thing is true in the home. Unless a father enforces what he sets out as a policy, then the policy really does not stand. And so if you have a policy in the home that there is going to be, only an hour of electronics a day, which is one of the policies we have in our home, but then you allow them to watch 2 hours, they understand, okay, well, 2 hours is okay. And so it's really important to stay consistent on this. Now, this is an area that is really easy to let slide. And, I've been guilty of this myself, of allowing the policies to slide just because I've gotten so caught up in other things. I haven't had time to discipline or whatever it is. And before too long, it's out of control. And enforcing the policies you have in place is the way to remedy that. Well, hopefully that has been helpful to you in kind of looking at the perspective of a father and his relationship to his family as being a ruler or a king in his home. And hopefully you've had some things there to think about, some areas that you might be able to work on, consider some ways in which you have done well, as well as some areas that you might be able to improve. And of course, if you're listening to this and you're a father, it's direct. If you're not, then maybe you could have your husband, if you're a wife, listen to this, listen to it, or kind of give them excerpts from that, or encourage them, pray obviously about it, these kinds of things. But hopefully it has been helpful. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
Is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and lift our hands and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Say goodbye. But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your legacy?